Today's Cloudcast is brought to you by Datadog, a cloud-scale monitoring platform that brings together your infrastructure metrics, distributed traces, and logs into one platform. Datadog enables all teams within an organization to track, manage, and monitor their SLOs in the same place that they're already monitoring and managing their applications, infrastructure, logs, user experience, and much more. Your teams are able to search, sort, and filter all their SLOs in a comprehensive view and easily visualize the status of individual SLOs in their application dashboards. This allows your teams to communicate that SLO status to the broader teams, executives, and external customers. Now you can manage all your SLOs along with your applications, infrastructure, and logs in one place with Datadog. Try Datadog for yourself with a free 14-day trial, and you'll receive a complimentary t-shirt. Just go to datadog.com/cloudcast. That's datadog.com/cloudcast.
Cloudcast Media presents from the massive studios in Raleigh, North Carolina. This is The Cloudcast with Aaron Delp and Brian Gracely, bringing you the best of cloud computing from around the world.
Good morning, good evening, wherever you are, and welcome back to The Cloudcast. We are coming to you live from the massive Cloudcast studios here in Raleigh, North Carolina. Hope everybody is doing well. We are continuing to move through May, and things are still sort of the same way they were the last week and the week after that and the week before that and the week before that. So hope everybody's doing well. For Cloud News of the Week, we're really going to hit on three acquisitions that happened recently. They weren't all necessarily last week, but they were all recently. The good news for all these acquisitions is that the acquiring company is very excited about this new company's culture. They have no plans to change it whatsoever. And the acquiring company is set to change the world. So with that, let's jump into kind of this week's Cloud News of the Week with the three acquisitions that recently happened. The first one is that NetApp acquired CloudJumper. This is really their move into sort of virtual desktops or virtual workspaces. Obviously, you know, lots of jokes about 2020 being the year of cloud VDI, but I think we are beginning to see, you know, what some of the new normal may look like, and being able to sort of securely deliver desktop environments, whether those are for developers or for, you know, knowledge workers, is going to be an important thing. And we're seeing different ways in which that's being enabled. The second one of the acquisitions is that NVIDIA acquired Cumulus Networks. So Cumulus Networks, a company that really was trying to take on open source networking. They were a company that we've had on the show a couple of times from way back in the day. Some ex-Cisco folks and folks who were really trying to shake up networking. They are being acquired by NVIDIA, really kind of going after the networking challenges that are in the data center, especially around AI and some of those data-intensive types of applications. So congratulations to the Cumulus team. And then finally, everybody's favorite company these days, Zoom, has recently acquired Keybase. So Keybase.io acquired by Zoom. Zoom, obviously, while they're growing an enormous amount, also had some challenges they had to address in terms of security, whether those were actual or sort of perceived. Keybase is going to help them with some things around end-to-end encryption and them just overall trying to build up their security sort of security bona fides, if you will, to really try and assure enterprise customers and others that they can be a viable player in the communication space and the telecommunication space and video conferencing and so forth. So exciting to see those three companies get acquired. It's good to see that, you know, we're seeing activity happen around the technology space. Those things going on. There are some other things that we're going to talk about next week that came out that we really want to dig into a little bit more before we throw them into Cloud News of the Week. But excited about all those things. And with that, we're going to kind of wrap up Cloud News of the Week. We do have an interesting topic this week. We've never really covered business intelligence or BI as a capability on the show. We've talked about a lot of database capabilities. We've never really talked about BI. And so we're very excited to be talking about that this week, right after the break. Today's show is sponsored by StrongDM. Are you transitioning your team to work from home? Are you managing a gazillion SSH keys, database passwords, and Kubernetes certs? Well, meet StrongDM. Manage and audit access to servers, databases, and Kubernetes clusters, no matter where your employees are. With StrongDM, you can easily extend your identity provider to manage infrastructure access, automate onboarding and offboarding, and move people within roles. You can even grant temporary access that automatically expires to on-call teams. Your admins will get full auditability into anything anybody does, when they connect, what queries they run, and what commands are typed. This means full visibility into everything. For SSH, RDP, and Kubernetes, this means video replays. For databases, it's a single unified query log across all database management systems. StrongDM is used by companies like Hearst, Peloton, Betterment, Greenhouse, and SoFi to manage access. It's more control and less hassle. That's Strong DM. Manage and audit remote access to infrastructure. Start your free 14-day trial today at strongdm.com/cloudcast. Hey, listeners, do you have some time on your schedule on May 27th? Want to hear from some of the leaders in DevOps and the open source community and network with other engineers? Reserve your spot for Open Observability, the online conference scheduled for May 27th that will feature exclusive presentations from the visionaries behind several open source projects, as well as best practices and success stories from engineers around the globe. Cloudcast is a proud sponsor with the event host Logs.io and to be exclusive podcast sponsor for this 3-hour open source community event. Head to openobservability.io, that's openobservability.io, to reserve your seat today. And we're back. You know, and folks, while we talk about a lot of topics on this show, we talk about applications, we talk about infrastructure, we talk about all of the major public clouds, you know, one of the topics that Aaron and I have always been very curious about, but we've never really dove into in enough depth to really kind of feel like we were starting to get a grasp of it is some of the things that go on, not only in data, because we've talked about data and the importance of data, but really kind of how people are using data for business intelligence and really the whole evolution of what's going on with business intelligence, you know, in that space. Not only how do you manage large amounts, quantities of data, data from different sources, but almost as importantly, how do we make it usable for everybody? Because, you know, more and more in our daily lives, we're comfortable with it, and we just need the right tools to sort of make that work. So very, very excited today. It's one of those opportunities we get when, you know, Aaron and I always go back to the rule of thumb for Cloudcast, which is, you know, if it's a topic that you don't know anything about, go find somebody who's an expert at it and go pick their brain. So very excited to have Pedro Arellano, who is the head of product marketing for Looker, which as of about a year ago is now part of the Google Cloud. So Pedro, very excited to have you on the show today.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here and I appreciate the invitation.
Yeah. You know, like I said, you know, in the introduction, you know, you're sort of an expert in the space. You've been around sort of what we'd consider sort of the data industry for a while. Give folks a sense of your background prior to Looker and then, you know, kind of some of the transitions that you've been making as the company's transitioned from kind of a well-known startup company into moving into Google.
Yeah. For a while is a good way of describing my time in this space. I've been in business intelligence my entire career. I'm a computer engineering major, and I started my career at a company called MicroStrategy back in the late 90s. That's a name that will probably be familiar to people in your audience who follow the BI space.
Yeah.
I spent 16 years there, started when the company was still private, had the opportunity to do some really great work, worked as a did a lot of things, worked as a tech support engineer. I ran a professional services practice, so did customer implementations, did some product management there too, and then wrapped up my time there in product marketing. After that, I spent the next 5 years at another BI company called Burst. I ran their product strategy team. That was a big change. It was my first experience with a Bay Area tech company, you know, and got to notice some really interesting differences from the East Coast tech scene where I started my career. And then after that, I had the opportunity to join Looker. And obviously, I had heard about Looker, but I was really impressed when I met the team and I learned more about Looker's product and the vision. And it definitely changed the way that I had learned to think about BI. And that's what was really exciting about this opportunity and just about the space in general. It's a space, you know, that keeps changing as you're talking about transitions, you know, throughout my career. I started my career in the days where, you know, technologies like Teradata and Informatica or MicroStrategy and Business Objects were the gold standard, you know? And then you get into the mid-2000s and the industry completely changed with the emergence of the data visualization specialists, you know, that were focused very heavily on the data analyst experience and then completely turned the industry on its head. And that was pretty exciting. And now what we're seeing is a push towards this notion of data experiences that's really pushing BI beyond the constraints of how we've typically thought about it, and that's pretty exciting right now.
Yeah, I know. You know, when I used to walk some of the trade show floors the last couple of years, you know, you go through, there's certain big companies, you see their stuff, and then you go into the areas where some of the startups are, and the things that Looker would demonstrate always kind of caught my eye, and it was a space that I didn't quite understand, but you know, just looking at the things that the way that you would present information was always, you know, kind of in the back of my mind, always going, I'd love to know more about what they do. So excited to have you on. You know, like I mentioned in the introduction, we now live in this world where not only are we surrounded by data, but I think people feel relatively comfortable looking at large amounts of data if it's presented the right way, if it's visualized the right way. But not all of us have, you know, kind of hardcore data scientist skills. You talked about Looker having this sort of new approach to BI that was different than you had seen in the past. Can you give us a sense of, you know, what are those differences in the way that they're trying to make this, you know, more applicable for a broader audience and more people that have to make decisions or have to, you know, be part of collaborating around decisions?
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting that you talk about how people are more comfortable with data, because it's absolutely true. Just, you know, just in our daily lives, yeah. I think we're just used to experiencing data, even when we're not even thinking about it. I mean, silly things, you know, like you know, just if anybody that's played fantasy sports,
right?
They're making decisions using data with the objective of beating the competition, right? Even when you're, you know, sitting on your couch watching Netflix, you're getting all this recommendations that are based on analysis of your preferences and your viewing history. We're surrounded by data, and I think that that's influenced the way that we approach or expect data at work. And I think from a Looker perspective, it starts with recognizing that different people or different roles need to interact with data in different ways, right? You have this category of people whose job is data. That's what they do. That's their job description. Right. I'm talking about data analysts, data scientists, you know, data architects, right? And then you have another category of people, the larger category, which I call, you know, the rest of us. Our job isn't data. That's not our job description, but we still need data to perform our jobs. And what's interesting here is that even though we need data, we don't really live or even want to live in the tools that data analysts use or the data scientists use. So we end up using tools like Excel. You probably heard the stat that 2/3 of companies are still using Excel as their main BI tool. And that's where the Looker approach comes in. It's we're trying to reach people in the applications where they live every day. So if you're a data analyst, you know, we've got a modern BI experience for you. If you're a data scientist, we've got a data modeling experience for you. If you're somebody who works in sales operations, you know, we can add data to your CRM experience. Or if you don't want to use a tool at all, you know, we can use data to automate or power workflows that don't need manual intervention. So it's really all about recognizing this very important fact that people, even though we're comfortable with data, we use it and we consume it in different ways.
Yeah. And it's, you know, I think you hit on sort of the power of this is when the capabilities aren't there for kind of anybody to go explore what's possible with it, you do get these sort of niches and, you know, information is sort of siloed in groups. The more you unlock that, and in some cases, like you said, it's, I don't necessarily want to learn Jupyter Hub or R or Python. I want the information. I want to kind of play with it. And, you know, that's when you see these tipping points of, you know, new trends in how companies collaborate, because they all can use data, but they can see it in the way that you talked about. I think that's really powerful. One of the things that you would know this from having been around kind of traditional BI for a long time, one of the challenges was you want to pull information from lots of sources so that you can, you know, correlate and causate between them. And there was always this big challenge of, you know, the different data sources weren't designed to work together. You had to go through big, costly ETL processes and so forth. You know, one of the things that Looker is sort of well known for is, you know, bringing in, being able to pull from lots of data sources. How do you overcome some of that ETL challenge or expense or whatever to start to make, you know, different sources be relevant to each other?
I think it's based on our approach to data modeling. You know, our secret sauce is something that we call LookML. It's Looker's data modeling language. And what LookML does is it allows you to create a data model that acts as a layer of complete abstraction between your users and the physical data. So what this does is it allows people to interact with the data without having to speak SQL. So that's very, very important there in the benefit of abstraction. But in addition to abstraction, this data model also acts as a single repository of reusable definitions and business logic. So it also gives you singularity and reusability. So what does that mean? It means that the definition of profit is the same across all your data sources, right? And any calculation or any KPI that you define in your business logic is consistent across all your applications. So not only are you giving your non-technical people or the people that are not data experts a way to work with data, but you're also providing, you know, the proverbial single source of truth so that people can trust, you know, the data that they're working with and the analysis that they're doing. And I guess finally, Looker's data model is version controlled. We integrate with Git, so it follows, you know, software development best practices, multiple collaborators, and this makes developing the data model a lot more, you know, a lot faster and more agile.
Interesting. Yeah, we see that that need to do version control and tie it in with software tools. So important in kind of all sorts of aspects of whether it's data or application development these days. So it's interesting that you guys are adapting and enabling that. You talked about it. I mentioned, you know, one of the things that would always attract me as I would come by the Looker booth before it was part of Google was, you know, kind of the visualization. You talked earlier about, you know, the importance of kind of data the way that people want it. Do you find, especially as, you know, decisions have to be collaborated across groups and people have to, you know, get their idea across in a short period of time. It might be, you know, you get two slides in this presentation. Like, are you finding that visualization is becoming more and more important in terms of people can, they just have to see it to recognize it. Sometimes just looking at numbers doesn't do it for them.
I do. I think it's very important. I think that the ability to, I guess, translate numerical data into charts and visualizations, that presumably will make it easier for a general audience to understand. Mm-hmm. And that's very important. And I would recommend a very helpful Looker blog that we have on this topic to your audience. It's a blog on our website. It's called How to Choose the Best Chart or Graph for Your Data. Okay. I really recommend it. But the point I want to make here is that it's not just about being able to create visualizations. Really, it's about your ability to tell a story that influences opinions. And there's this great article, you know, the HBR, Harvard Business Review article about data scientists and the art of persuasion. You're probably familiar with it.
Yeah.
It talks about this thing they call the statistician's curse. You know, where you've got this really strong analysis and you spend a lot of time on your charts and your visualizations and you put it all in your slides and you're ready to present. And when you're presenting and you're telling your story, you use language that is unfamiliar to your audience, right? Mm-hmm. So they lose interest. And it's very frustrating because your analysis could have been right on target, but you lost the opportunity to influence the thinking of your audience. So yes, there's definitely a science to choosing the right visualization. And like I said, we have a great blog that goes through the various types of visualizations and the use cases where that makes sense. But the point is that if you don't know how to tell that story in a way that your audience can, you know, understand, then even the best visualizations won't really make a big difference.
Interesting. Yeah. And we will get links to those in the show notes for folks that are listening to this. You won't have to go back and remember it. I want to shift gears a little bit. You're part of Google. Google has access to an amazing amount of information. Some of it's public, some of it's just the way that they correlate things. Do you find, as you're talking to companies these days, that just based on the fact that you have access to so many resources, that you're now introducing them to, you know, kind of a different way of thinking of going, I know you used to look at this resource and this resource or this pool of data, but maybe you're in this industry, you should start to look at this. We see some interesting patterns that could emerge. Is that something that you would typically do with a company in terms of helping them figure out another order of, you know, something that could help them narrow down a decision or open up a new idea for them?
Yeah, I mean, we have a pretty talented and helpful professional services organization that brings a lot of industry expertise to customer implementation. So it's more about just having a developer that knows how to use the product. It's also about having that, you know, subject matter or domain expertise to try and enrich the analysis. There's now this part of Google that's scales, you know, even more,
right?
Because there's a lot of, you know, industry specific subject matter expertise within Google that we can really leverage and help customers that way. And then from a product perspective, what we've really focused on is just making a very scalable process that makes it very easy to extend the data models so that any new data sources that need to be added to the analysis, you know, you don't have to start from scratch or you want that flexibility to extend the logical data model without having to make changes to the underlying physical data. And that's what you can do with Looker, and specifically the LookML layer.
What are some of the things that you're seeing, you know, as you get into the product specific things and how you work with some of your companies and customers? What are some of the sort of newer trends that you're seeing people doing, you know, using BI either directly for or as part of kind of a new way that they're thinking about their business, a new way of thinking about using data? Any sort of trends that you're seeing emerge, or sort of interesting customer examples that you were like, you know, 2 years ago, we weren't seeing that at all?
Yes. We're going through one of those transformation points in this industry, and these are the moments where BI gets, for those of us in the space, it becomes a lot of fun. What we're seeing now is a really profound change in the way that companies use data. You mentioned earlier, you know, you were talking about walking through a trade show and seeing what, you know, vendors are showing. And what you see when you do that, if you just spend a couple of minutes doing there, are charts and visualization, you know, reports and dashboards. The notion of BI is sort of very closely attached with the concept of a report and a dashboard. That's how you use data.
Yeah.
And that's fine. You know, that's predominantly, you know, the main use case for data. I think it will remain so for the foreseeable future. But it's also starting to change. And it's interesting that you see these innovative companies, you see a lot of them with our customers, that no longer think of data as something that's simply displayed on a screen for somebody to analyze it. And what they're doing is they're finding these really interesting ways to integrate data into their business workflow. So we've coined the term data experiences to describe these use cases. So for example, there's a gaming company, its marketing department build a bot, and this bot automatically adjusts bids on online ads up or down depending on the performance of those ads. We're seeing companies that automatically present discounts, a discount offer to a customer because they're likely to churn. Right? Or companies that are using natural language to ask about inventory levels in a chat application, and they're ordering additional units based on that answer. And these are really interesting and enormously valuable use cases. But what's fascinating about them is that at no point, you know, does somebody, they don't revolve around a dashboard, right? It's more about how can you fuel workflows through data and to just make things happen. And I think that this is where BI is headed. So it's important for companies to start thinking about, how do I get more value from my data than the things that I'm doing today? And that helps me sort of expand my thinking of what BI is and what it can do.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like what you're saying is, you know, in the past it was, you know, step one, collect a lot of information. Step two, BI was kind of giving us insights so that we could take an action or make a decision. And what you're ultimately saying now is, you know, there are ways to now use that in, you know, more proactive ways, more actionable ways, not just, hey, we could make a decision, but, you know, because of all the ways that we can do it, whether it's, you know, bots or A/B testing or knowing about customer actions or streaming events, like, it now becomes sort of more of an engine of what could be a lot of actions and then ongoing sort of second and third order actions that could be happening.
Yes, 100%. And I think what that does is it greatly expands the audience that you can reach with data. As I was saying earlier, the people that don't live or want to live within a BI tool, but it can still benefit from data in these ways.
Yeah. Let me ask you one last question. And again, very much appreciative of your time and your insight on this. Are you seeing, you know, we have audience that has a lot of different job roles, and I know a lot of them are often trying to figure out, you know, how do I help my company in new ways? How do I, you know, maybe, you know, surface a new idea? Are you finding, you know, sort of new job roles are beginning to become interested in BI, or the fact that you're making it simpler for them to access these things? Are you hearing any stories like that for people that, like you said, maybe aren't data scientists, data analysts, kind of jumping into this and going, hey, I was able to drive some new initiative in my company?
I think we're seeing a couple of things. One is you're seeing roles being up-leveled, and what that means is technology is making it possible for non-experts to do things that previously might have been the exclusive domain of experts. So, for example, if you're not a data analyst, there's now solutions that allow you to do things that previously only a data analyst would be able to do with minimal training, right? Okay. If you're not a data scientist, a tool is not going to transform you into a data scientist. That requires years of experience and formal training. But there's now software that runs machine learning algorithms automatically, or maybe helps choose the type of analysis that you want to do. And as this happens, what we're seeing is that roles, people in roles like data analysts and data scientists, can now start focusing on higher complexity, higher value problems, right? So it's up leveling, it's increasing their value. So I think that's pretty interesting, and that's one of the things that we're seeing happen with people's job roles.
Yeah, no, that's great. It's always good to see just where there are opportunities for people that are eager to maybe expand a role, to up level a role, or maybe even just begin to say, hey, how do I have either the right language or the right tool to communicate with somebody who they know is a data scientist, and they want to go, hey, if I brought together my marketing expertise with your data science expertise, maybe we start to unlock some things. So very, very cool to hear that happening. Pedro, kind of last thought, anything that you'd like for the listeners to be thinking about in terms of some of the trends that are on your radar, or stuff you expect to see in the next couple of months, where the things that you're working on with BI, that you guys are coming out with new capabilities, are going to be interesting and exciting for them?
We've got a pretty exciting roadmap in 2020. So a few projects that we'll be announcing throughout the year, but that I'm particularly very excited about. There's a lot of opportunity, now that Looker is part of Google, to do some really exciting things and pretty fast. So look out for that. I would say, though, just in general, not talking about technology specifically, this is a great time to be in data. There's this Gartner study out there that shows that data and analytics is the number one investment priority for any company that's undergoing a digital transformation journey. So there's a great opportunity to lead within an organization from data. So any data team, anybody that has an opportunity to influence data strategy, really has the opportunity to also lead where that company's going. And I think that's a pretty important and exciting place to be for those of us that work in this kind of thing.
That is excellent. That is very good advice for folks. And this audience has always been one who is looking for what's next, what's going to help them grow their career. So excellent advice. Pedro, thank you so much for the time today. As always, we always appreciate kind of digging into a new topic. And folks, we hope you enjoyed it. As always, thank you for listening to the show. Thanks for telling a friend. Thanks for giving us some feedback on iTunes and the other ways that you listen to your podcast. So with that, I'm going to wrap it up for myself and Aaron, and for Pedro. Again, we will talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to The Cloudcast. Please visit thecloudcast.net to find more shows, show notes, videos, and everything social media.